I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
It's Monday. It's the Luke and Pete Show. We do this every Monday and Thursday, people. I'm Pete Donaldson. I'm joined by Luke Moore for another foray into the strange. How you doing, man?
Pretty good. What's going on? How's it going, everyone?
Yeah, I think I overcooked the strange. I've spent the last hour looking at dolls on the internet that are little monkeys. These kind of like, you know, these kind of like real dolls. Not like the sexy real dolls, but like little dolls that women of a certain age seem to find fantastic. And they're very realistic, kind of premium, non-toy, adult sort of ornaments, I suppose you'd call them.
Yeah, I find it very odd, but I don't want to be too judgmental.
No.
So it's that they are ultra realistic, but are they meant to be? Are they meant to be cuddled, Peter? Are they meant to be?
I don't know. It would be a shame. It would be a shame to have ultra realistic little babies and not you know, pop them in the bed next to you or something, or have a little cuddle when you're feeling
pop
down.
Pop them in the scrapbook.
Pop one of their heads poking out the loft. Like, I'm not going to judge people for buying sort of realistic looking baby dolls, but I am going to judge them if those baby dolls are little orangutans.
I would judge them favourably if they were little orangutans.
Makes more sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think what that does is that increases the connection to people, to the everyday. And of course, as we know, orangutans environments being destroyed at a pretty rapid pace, mostly for palm oil, for that pesky palm oil. So I'm looking at you, Nutella eaters and peanut butter eaters. That's where most of it goes to, I'm led to believe.
I only eat.
Can I say that? Probably not. I've used a brand name there. Can I say that? I don't know.
What did you say? What did you say? You said peanut butter and
Nutella.
Nutella. Well, has it got any? I'm fairly certain Nutella took the palm oil out of their product. I'm going to clean this up by, you know, just saying something I don't think is actually backed up by fact. I think that orangutans should leave the jungle of Sumatra and Borneo and live with old women. I think that's where they should live.
So I'm going to come on to that very important point in just a second. But before I do, I'm reading here now that the palm oil used in Nutella is 100% RSPO certified sustainable palm oil and does not come from plantations subject to deforestation. That's my Alan Partridge bit. Chocolate oranges are available from Rawlinson's. Could we save the orangutans by a kind of pen pal exchange student type scheme? where an orangutan goes to stay with a lonely older woman. And I mean, are they docile? Because a chimp will take your face off. Let's make that absolutely clear.
Are they're pretty chill, docile? Aren't they? Yeah, orangutans are pretty docile. They're pretty
Look
calm.
At their faces.
Until they're not. Until they're not, Luke Moore. Yeah, and then maybe the older ladies could donate their husbands, their feckless husbands, to live in the jungle with the orangutan.
The question is, clothing aside, would anyone notice?
Exactly. Not in my case. I don't consume.
What would you do, Peter?
Much...
Sorry, Peter. I was just going to ask you a very important question. I do apologise for cutting across you, but this is important. If you were, if you had it demanded upon you to have to live with an orangutan in your current house for a certain amount of time, what kind of adjustments would you make to the homestead to make the orangutan less homesick? Would you maybe sort of affix a little swing in the corner where an easy chair would be, but put a swing there instead? Maybe.
Yeah. Well, I think orangutans would actually quite enjoy a nice lazy boy, easy boy sort of chair.
Is it easy boy?
I'm fairly certain easy
boy
is lazy boy, easy boy. That's what you say to a horse.
That's the people
to calm down.
The capital, isn't it? The easy boy.
Yeah, exactly. I would obviously have to get rid of all my palm oil products, so I would have to subsist on a peanut butter diet of like dog peanut butter, because dogs get very sick if they eat anything with palm oil in them. So if you ever buy dog peanut butter, doesn't have any palm oil in it, so there you go.
So you couldn't say, for example, give the orangutan who's staying with you some peanut butter and offer it up as a little taste of home?
Oh, that would be gauche, wouldn't it? That would be very gauche, wouldn't it?
Because I tell you what, my cats go mental whenever there's a wildlife documentary on the TV, particularly if it involves birds. They're all about that. So I wonder if the orangutan in question would be more interested in that type of programming. They probably recognise David Attenborough when they saw him before.
They probably think of him as a kind of like an apparition, like a ghostly white apparition.
So what other adjustments are you making in the homestead? Are you probably going to fence off the garden, I expect?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have quite so much, you know, there's so many wires around. They'd start tearing it to bits. They'd strip the wires. They'd be sick everywhere from the terrible food I feed them.
It would be
a real shame. Yes, I would, of course I would. As I've said on this podcast before, I used to work in a zoo that, I can't remember why, some kind of medical reason, the little baby orangutan used to wear a little nappy. So they would all wear nappies. I don't want them pooing all over my house. Yeah, less admin, exactly.
If you can train the orangutan to go for a shit in the toilet.
Yeah, I'd have a go.
Just show them how you do it. All they've got to do is see you doing one poo and they're done. That's it.
Right, yeah, but worst case scenario, you have to do it loads of times and then you're just a man who's, you know, publicly defecating in front of a simian.
I also think if you woke up in the middle of the night, like half asleep and needed to go to the toilet, and you stumbled across the orangutan, it might be like, oh my God, I've seen an apparition of myself. And it'd be quite frightening.
Well, I frequently think I've stepped onto a dog when it's actually just a pair of fluffy slippers in the night. So I'm just constantly screaming.
So our cats, we put them out into the dining room /kitchen/garden in the evening, so they know at a certain time each night, and they run out there automatically now. It's quite clever. It's quite cute. About 10. I give them some food to sustain them through the night hours and shut the dining room door, and they don't scratch to come in or anything. They're used to it. So you don't section off the house with your two dogs that you've got access to?
No, I think the two dogs have access to. One of the dogs likes to hide under things, and the other dog, the older dog, will just lie on the bed. And you can this is the dance we do every night.
Right.
My partner will be in bed and next to her will be the dog, the older dog, who decides, and he'll always be sleeping on my pillow. And for a hay fever / for an asthmatic who's allergic to dogs, it's a nightmare. But I know if push comes to shove, what decision would be made if I kicked up a fuss. I carefully pick him up, and he growls at me, and I go, Buckley, calm it down, because look, you can't sleep on my pillow. What if I rolled over and squished you? That would be awful. So you go down the bottom of the bed, and he's free to do what he wants down there. Just
within reason.
Stay away from my eyes with your fur.
It's good to get a reminder for all the assorted and assembled listeners, wherever they are in the world, exactly where Pete Donaldson sits in the Donaldson household pecking order, right? Because I'm definitely at the bottom in my house.
I'm lower than the lawn.
It's got to the point now where, I'm so low down I could crawl under the carpet with a top hat on. That's how low down I am. But it's got to the point now where one of my cats, so I've got two, right? One's really stupid to the point of where he can't even remember where his food bowl is, and he meows for food and I have to pick him up and put him in front of the food bowl, right? The other one is quite clever, and we've got a routine now which has to be adhered to every single morning since we started lockdown, which is that he comes in the morning, he has his food, then he goes into the bathroom, he jumps up onto the side and he starts pouring or sniffing the tap. You have to turn the tap on so he can have a drink. Once he's finished with that, of course, he's a cat, so he can't turn the tap off. You have to turn it off yourself. He goes into the bedroom, he jumps up on the little bit by the windowsill. You have to open the window for 5 minutes so he can sit on the outside of the windowsill or he won't shut up. And then once he's finished with that, he goes onto the foot of the bed and then goes to sleep for a bit. And you have to do that every day or your life is a living hell. So I can only imagine what an orangutan's routine is like.
What a way to start a day, though, having a really perilous kind of like sit on a windowsill for a bit.
They always, all summer, mate, when the windows are open, they're out on the windowsills the whole time. My friend James McEnany, right? Good friend of mine. I haven't seen him for years. Used to work with him. If you're listening, James, hello.
Jay McEnany.
Yeah, that's his name, yeah. He sounds exactly like John Lennon when he speaks, which is part of a massive part of the reason I was friends with him. Yeah. But his parents used to own a hotel in Ireland, right? And they had a couple of cats that lived in the hotel. I guess they were probably mice catchers or something. And he said they'd spend all their time jumping between the balconies of the hotel. Sometimes they'd be 10, 11 stories up, and they never once fell. Never.
Well, I mean, so you'd know if they did, wouldn't you?
Say again?
It's very binary if they've done it. If they never once fell. Well,
I said to him, your mum's probably just replacing them every time. You don't realise.
Yeah, exactly.
Was there a pile of cats on the floor outside the hotel? It could have been your cats, actually.
Your cat pile.
But yeah, so I can only imagine what a routine would be like for. Because do you remember there was a programme back in the day? I can't remember exactly why, but there was some kind of programme where there were these two people, I think it was in South Africa, and they were looking after endangered animals, or I guess providing some kind of like shelter for animals. And they had this hippo, but the hippo lived in the house with them. And
right.
It would come in the living room and just sit in the living room. And it was absolutely gigantic, right? And I just thought, that's gone too far there, because they're statistically very dangerous animals. And two, the house wasn't that big.
Like a prefab bungalow. I'm confused. Like, was it? Are you confusing the adverts? Were they eating moose? Were they eating strawberry moose?
No.
Were they the hippopotamuses?
No, they had like a big reserve, and so they had animals living on the reserve in harmony. I imagine in perfect harmony, away from the poachers. But I think that what they didn't do is they didn't stop one of the hippos coming into the house, which for me is a mistake, right?
Mm.
And I think the hippo got used to it and it got into a routine. That's the thing, animals, they like a routine. And it just every night when they'd be sitting down in front of the TV, this big hippo would be in there with them. I'm sure we talked about this before, because I think we talked about it when you saw a hippo get hit with a tea tray. I think it was around that kind of conversation.
Mm. Interesting. Well,
anyway,
I hope that hippo's still okay and doesn't, you know, stroll around with a suit and tie on.
No.
With his airs and graces.
No. Can we talk about something a little bit closer to home? Because I think you're going to like this. It's about Brexit, Pete.
Okay.
Do you want to hear Brexit, or are you fed up of
it now? It's happened, mate. I never thought I'd be that into hearing about Brexit over the top of a pandemic, to be quite frank.
No. But do you know what Brexit is?
Roughly. Yeah.
I think, do any of us know what it is now? It's kind of more of an elaborate, almost bit of like performance theatre these days.
Yeah. How do you see those fishermen have rocked up at the House of Parliament with their fishy wares?
Oh,
that's going to stink by the morning, isn't it?
What'd they say?
Again? They just sort of rocked. There's just a load of lorries, fish lorries, outside the Houses of Parliament. I don't know. I hope they're just going to start dropping fish all over Parliament Square. That would be freaking great.
It's mad to me
around.
This has been pointed out before by cleverer and finer minds than mine, of which there are many. But it's mad to me how passionate people can get about British fish, but not about British people.
Or any people, really.
You tell some absolute penis in the House of Commons, probably going to be a Tory, that some Frenchman once took a single fish, out of a British fisherman's net, and they will have a heart attack. Right, you tell that same person that 50 people of various different nationalities sank in the Channel in a very, very inadequate dinghy. They don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. It's mad.
No,
it's absolutely mental to me.
The fish will be British, and the fish will be happier.
Yeah,
as Mogg said.
That was old Rees-Mogg, wasn't it?
Yeah, I bet he likes fish.
Do you know what I'd love to do? I'd love to give him a Chinese burn. I wouldn't be just a quick Chinese burn, because I think it's a language he would understand.
I'd like to smash his glasses, like not because I know how annoying. If anyone picks up my if I leave my glasses down and I say, can you pass me glasses, and most people will just grab them by the lens. Now that boils my piss. I mean, chronic. I mean, just pass me them by the legs. Now I've got to clean those, haven't I?
Don't touch the lens of any glasses, whether they're spectacles for seeing with or whether they're sunglasses. It annoys me when people put your sunglasses down, lens first down.
Oh,
you scratch them there. There's all sorts of microfibers going on that are going to scratch that there. And that puts my teeth on edge. But speaking of that, Pete, my wife and I had a little disagreement the other week, and she called me Larry David for it. But I think she's in the wrong, so maybe you can rule. I kind of know which way this is going to go.
I'm glad this show's descending to airing grievances from relationships.
Well, I'm getting more and more like Larry David every week, so I've been getting used to it. So my wife says I've got a reputation of being bad with sunglasses, as in losing them, not looking after them, etc., which probably is true. And I'm sure that many people listening will recognise that kind of behaviour, right? Yeah. Some people I know refuse to buy expensive sunglasses because they last about 5 minutes. I know that. But when my wife was going through the list of sunglasses that I had lost or not looked after, she included the pair of sunglasses that were in the backpack that I had stolen, right? And I was saying, that shouldn't count in the list because that's not my fault. Right,
but
she was saying but it's part of a wider pattern.
I think it fleshes out the character. If you want to see it stricken for the record, fine, that's up to you as a defence. But I think that's a character statement for me. I mean,
that's pathetic, by you. You're just more scared of me than you are of me. That's understandable.
She's of Italian extraction, as you said before. She beat me up. I do sort of think that. If someone was coming to this show, the way that you speak about me and I speak about you, they would sort of go, well, Pete's probably the one who's lost a computer, a mobile phone in recent times. And it's not. It's actually Luke Moore who's lost all of those things. So
yeah.
I would say, you're more of a victim of crime than careless, I would say, though.
It's got to the point.
People want to hurt you.
It's part of a kind of wider narrative. Like these days, it does take me much longer to leave the house because it takes me ages to work out what I need to take with me and whether I've got it. Especially when you've got to factor in things like masks and everything now. The amount of times now I've gone for a run, because that's the only thing you can do, go for a walk or a run. And Mimi said, get something from the shop on the way back. And I've remembered my mask, and I've remembered my phone so I can listen to music or a podcast when I'm running, and I've not forgotten my debit card. So I get into the shop, do all the shopping with my mask on, get to the till, and I've got no debit card, and I have to put everything back because I used to work in the supermarket, and I don't like it when people don't put things back. I think we've talked about that before as well.
Could you not just have the basket and just sort of type that code into the till, and then I'll come back and get it in a bit?
Nah, because I'm not going to go home and then come all the way back again. I'll just have to off. Just have beans on toast for dinner.
I do think that I find myself about to walk into a shop, realise I haven't got a mask with me, and I have to do, if I'm wearing a scarf or if I'm wearing a jumper, I'll sort of wrap it around my head and put my arm over my face.
Is that a loophole?
What is a mask effect? If you just wrap your whole face in jumper, covering your nose and your mouth, I mean, that's probably better than a flimsy bit of cloth, surely. And if you've got your arm over it, like you're doing that joke about how do you ask an elephant for a bun, or how does an elephant ask for a bun?
Oh, yeah.
That's fine. I think that's fine. You look like an idiot, but it's fine.
I think that shouldn't be exploitable as a loophole. I think if you've got no mask, you should do a decent thing and go home.
Right, okay. Well, you know.
Anyway.
I mean, some of these masks haven't been washed for like 6 months, Luke. Well, some people just have one mask. It's disgusting.
Yeah, that's not great. It's also not great to... What I need to do is actually plan my shopping trip separately, because when you've just been doing some exercise, if you're as unfit as I am, you don't get your breath back for a wee while, and you don't want to be putting your mask on there because it's like, it's quite difficult.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Well,
anyway,
I mean, and if you don't wear a mask, you might be confused with Lawrence Fox, who bought a little...
Since you raised it, that is a constant thorn in my side. The only difference being that he's skinnier than me and a bit older.
He's starting to look a little... I think he's... I mean, he's not well in the head, but he's lost a bit of weight, I think, probably through worry about his career and the things he said, all of which are deserved and valid.
And the checks have dried up.
So I think somebody made the point that he's starting to look a little bit like a cartoon rat that's been turned into a human. He looks like Tommy Tippy.
I mean, at first glance, I was like, when you first just said that, then I was like, that's really harsh. And then I was like, yeah, I can see it. But the thing about that is, right, we have to go for a break in a minute, but very, very, very briefly, like, this is the thing. Your Lawrence Foxes, your Toby Youngs, your Julia Hartley Brewers, these people, right, if you look at it properly, they don't actually have a political position or anything. Like, they're not arguing the other side of a political debate. They're basically just after attention, right? So the very idea that, like, Toby Young could be an expert in like epidemiology or virology or what the best thing to do is in the case of a pandemic is, and I'm going to choose my words carefully here, a fucking joke, right? And that man is a fucking cunt. Right.
Well, he talks about eugenics and stuff. Like he on more than one occasion has said that low value or low income families should have access to better genetic code. Effectively, I'm fairly certain I'm not paraphrasing that.
Are you just saying things, Toby? Have you just run out of things to say in your privileged mess of a life that you're just making things up as you go along now?
I mean that seems to be about what he's saying, and it's like, really, mate? Because you aren't a specimen, really, are you? You've got no hair, mate, for one.
Yeah. Right, and also, Peter, you see there was a guy last week, a chap called Lord Sumption, who tried to clear up. So someone accused him of saying that people who had stage 4 cancers lives weren't of value, right? And it was like part of a live discussion program on the BBC, and it was done in the context of, it might have been ITV actually, but anyway, some terrestrial TV show. Excuse me. And it was done in the context of shielding, right? Of the fact that, you know, people need to shield if they are in stage 4 cancer, sadly, because obviously they're very vulnerable to COVID. And he was accused of it on live TV. And the way he cleared it up was, he went, no, I didn't say they weren't of value. I said they were less valuable. Thanks very much.
Was it Nikki Campbell who was sort of going,
Nikki Campbell,
sorry.
Yeah,
because Nikki Campbell, because the woman was on a,
yeah,
on a live
cut,
video link.
He was like, and he went,
sorry.
That's a news line there.
That's a big thing to say. And I think you didn't hear that and you need to react to it. And she was so... I don't think she had the kind of like the gravity of what that man
did. Process it, yeah. Another human being has said your life isn't worth as much as his, and he's meant it.
Yeah.
Speaking Love of it. Nikki Campbell, I have to single him out for particular praise, because I once had an encounter with Nikki Campbell that wasn't positive.
Right.
It wasn't not in a kind of serious way or anything, but just like he exhibited a certain amount of behaviour, and someone asked me about it. On Twitter, and so I just replied saying, "Oh, this is what happened," and you can find it. It's not massively exciting, and he saw my tweet, and he must have just been searching for his name or something. I don't know why, but this is years ago when people probably did that a bit more on Twitter, and he sought me out and he tweeted me, and he said, "I don't remember the incident, but I was probably having a bad day, and I tried to be as polite and as respectful as I can. So I'm really sorry about that, and I hope you won't hold it against me." And I was like, "All right, of course, no worries."
That's really
what
nice.
What a nice fella! Yeah.
That's turned a negative into two positives, in my opinion.
Exactly. But I mean, not as far as the Lord Sumption thing is concerned. I mean, he needs to have a look at himself. Let's have a break, Peter. When we come back after the break, we will do a couple of emails. And I have to say, I know that it's been up and down recently, but we've had some absolute belters this week. And so we should embark upon reading them as soon as we come out the other side of this ad break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. Bet you get 30, 30, bet you get 30, bet you get 20, 20, 20, bet you get 20, 20, bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This week at Sukarnov.
Me and Luke have been whiling away the lockdown with our usual nonsense on the Luke and Pete Show. Here's a quick taste of the kind of challenges we've been setting for ourselves.
Give us any nation and I'll tell you why they're dirty.
All right, I'll do it now.
Italy. Yeah. It looks like a sexy boot.
There's also a brand new episode of On the Continent, your weekly guide to the sublime and frequently ridiculous in European football. Find it over on Football Ramble Presents every Thursday.
Neymar's responded to this in kind that they forgot to tell you how to win titles. Then Alvaro has responded with a picture of Pelé with three World Cups going... in the eternal shadow of the king.
This reminds me of Stormzy and Wiley. The spots that they have.
All that and a whole lot more at Sukarnov.
And as a car hurtles past my road, which you possibly hear, possibly not, this is the Luke and Pete Show.
I'm Pete Donaldson.
Never mind. Well, you said there was a man having a really loud conversation next to your house. You could hear someone else, and we said we couldn't hear it. So we're all right.
It's good.
We're all right.
It's a good story, Pete. Nice one, mate.
If I had any self-respect, I would start that part of the show again. But it's just been a long day, to be honest.
I think that ship has sailed. I think it's sailed, to be honest. Listen, hello at lukeandpeteshow.com is the email address to get in touch. And you've done so in your droves this week, probably because there's a pandemic on and you literally, quite literally, cannot leave the house. Sean from Whitley Bay has got in touch. Now, I feel like he is a regular contributor, Pete. Is that right?
Sounds about right.
Hmm. Do you want to expand on that so I can have a drink of water?
I thought you were launching into the message, to be quite frank.
Thank you very much. I am now. He says, all right, my little lovelies. On Monday's show last week, Luke asserted that the RAF, the Royal Air Force, are the campest of the armed forces. Do you remember that, Pete?
I do, yes.
I think I was thinking about the uniforms, the moustaches, the clipped kind of way of speaking. Yeah. He says, Luke, I know you're from a naval town, so this may come as a shock, but the campest force is clearly the Navy.
Yes.
Exhibit A, those delightful outfits, complete with bell-bottoms, neckerchiefs, and those adorable daft little hats. Exhibit B, the existence of Camp Disco Classic in the Navy by the village people.
Correct. Correct, exhibit, yes.
Exhibit C, the phrase, hello, sailor. Said in a Larry Grayson voice that was frequently used on TV in the 70s and the 80s. The RAF might be full of fancy dads and posh boys with accents as clipped as their neat moustaches, but the Navy wins hands down for camp aesthetic. Even that lad from the advert that was born in Blythe but made in the Royal Navy would have to admit that. Much love, Sean from Whitley Bay. And Pete, before I bring you in, I'm going to have to say Sean makes a very compelling case.
And it's lovely to hear about the I was born in Blythe Royal Navy advert, because I think I once went for that advert and obviously didn't get the voiceover because I'm not
what?
From Blythe.
Expand on that.
I think I went for the car. Actually, it was either Blythe or Carlisle. I think it might have been Carlisle because Carlisle people kind of speak the same as people from Teesside. It's a really weird quirk. We have the same vernacular and kind of
I don't even know where Blythe
here
is.
And there. Blythe's sort of up north of Newcastle, I do believe. Blythe Spartans. Right. I know Blythe, you know Blythe Spartans.
Yeah, I know the name of the football team.
Yeah, well, that's all you need, isn't it? Football helps you.
So if you're going to rank the... So I think in America they include the Coast Guard as a service as well. But I don't think we do here. So, yeah, I think it's probably just part of the Navy here or the Merchant Navy or something. But if you were going to rank the British services in order of campness, what are you saying?
Firemen.
That's not a service. I mean the armed forces.
What? So if you can have Coast Guard, I mean, like, would you know?
Have the Coast Guard in the UK. I think you can just have Navy, RAF and Army, I think.
Well, then you're narrowing our choices, aren't you? I mean, the Army's so kind of like, there's different kinds, isn't there? Hanging out in a big tank with someone else. I don't know, like just waiting in a tank for ages. Is that particularly camp? I don't really know.
Depends who's in there with you, I think.
Putting like camouflage makeup on and hiding in a sewer, like in the adverts. I'm just going off the adverts. Tank, sewer.
That's the Marines. That's not even the Army.
It's like Marines.
Can
as
I
well.
Just say, oh, so Lordy. Sitting in a tank, minding your own business, with your head poking at the top, having a look around, perhaps doing a crossword, not camp. Not being camp. Being in the tank with the lid closed, putting makeup on with Freddie Mercury, camp.
Right. What if you're in a... Right. Remember the video for Ready or Not by the Fugees? They're in a tank, right? The three of them are in a tank. Is it Praz? Who's the guy? Who was in the Fugees? It was...
Praz Michelle, you're thinking of. Or Wyclef, maybe?
Are they both... I know Wyclef was. Was Praz in the Fugees? I don't actually know. Either way, three of them are in the tank. What if the lady Fuji leaves?
And one of them's got a feather duster.
Why would he have a feather duster? If she leaves...
Did a bit of tidying up, did a bit of dusting. They need dusting, leaves. They're tanks, they still need to be dusted.
If she leaves, does it get camper? I don't know, I just don't know. I just think you would be able to cut the atmosphere with a knife.
All right, okay. In a tank, your head poking at the top... Yeah. And you go to fire your gun, but when you pull the trigger, a little feather duster pokes out the end. More camp. And it goes, like that. More camp. So
I think any service is a little bit camp, a little bit macho, and we salute our brave boys in the field.
What about fire? You said the fire service. What were you going to say about the fire service?
Just lifting people around, isn't it?
And
they've got
as well,
a pole.
And helmets.
And they've got a pole for dancing.
And they spray a hose.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
All right. So anyway, I hope we cleared that up for you, Sean. Peter, what have you got an email lined up there?
I've got an email lined up there. Let me just go into... I haven't actually... Well, I did
not
have...
Not lined up, is it? Yeah, I'll press on. Who do you think's more camp at, you or me? I would say you.
You can only be camp if you are also macho at the same time. But I don't have a macho bone in my body. So my direction is macho-ness, your direction is campness. Hello to David, Pilot Dave. Denver Airport and parachutes on passenger jets. Pilot Dave here.
Excellent.
I just want to cover a few topics talked about over the last month or so. The Denver bit's really long. I'll get to it in a bit. But the second topic is that parachutes for passengers on commercial jets, as you quite rightly theorised, this would cause issues. What if the aircraft was spinning out of control? The G-force would make it almost impossible for people to bail out, which is an issue that bomber pilots had during the war, and one reason why fast jets have ejector seats. Secondly, the regulation is to be able to evacuate a passenger jet on the ground in 90 seconds with only half the exit available. If you had this amount of time to evacuate an aircraft that is flying straight and level, you'd be right to assume that in most circumstances, the aircraft would have a good chance of a safe and successful landing. That's a really good point.
So
Pilot
just
Dave.
Say that again, just to clear that up for me again.
So
I don't really understand
it is,
that.
If you, basically, the regulation for usual disembarking in an emergency of a passenger jet is, you know, it's measured on the ground within 90 seconds, if only the half of the exits are available. But if you had 90 seconds, level, like an aircraft that's flying straight, you'd be right to assume that in most circumstances, the aircraft would have a good chance of a safe and successful landing.
Oh,
if it just
so if you can do that anyway, you might as well just land the thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And not if you're over water, though.
If you're over water, I mean, chances are you're probably not going to have the life jackets, are you? If it's not graded for, if you weren't planning on flying over a body of water, you probably wouldn't have the. It's just like that's what happened with the Miracle in the Hudson, isn't it? Because they just so happened to have a load of life vests on board.
The video of that guy, of the pilot, what's his name, James Sullenberger, is unbelievable. At one point, he just goes, "Man, that's not happening. We're going in the Hudson." Just like that. He decides it in like a second.
Do you want to go to Teterboro? Nah. Yeah. But he turned off this. He did this setting really early on, which I was watching a video about it quite recently, and he did this. He pressed a button that was very, very clever, and he managed to get everything kind of squared away in his mind very, very quickly. And just as he was coming into land, while the co-pilot was trying, who hadn't been trained really very much on this kind of plane, he was a Boeing pilot, and that was a another kind of plane, I think. I can't remember. But he was like trying to get the engines fired up again, going through all the checklists and stuff. But all the checklists were based on like planes that are already like really high in the sky, but they hadn't really height elevation before the bird strike, obviously. And apparently a few seconds before splashdown, he turned to his co-pilot and went, "Any ideas?" which is so like the best pilots are the ones with no egos at all, and he just went, "Any ideas?" And he goes, "Nope, all right then." No. You're going down, Chris. See you later. What a dude.
It's amazing.
What
it's
a
an
dude.
Amazing story. Amazing yeah. story. We've got loads more emails about parachuting, but I think sadly we've run out of time today, so we're going to have to get to those on Thursday. But thank you very much for sending all your emails in. We will get through as many of them as possible, starting with our second episode of the week, which will be on Thursday. So, Peter, let's get out of here. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. It's been fantastic to have your company as ever. I hope you're staying safe in the lockdown. Make sure you stay at home. Make sure you do your bit, and we'll be through this an awful lot quicker, won't we, Peter?
We will.
If it's getting a bit boring at home, get an orangutan.
Get one. Or just dress up like one.
Yeah, very nice, very nice. Good idea. We'll see you on Thursday. Thank you very much again for listening and for your company. And stay safe. We'll see you soon.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, "Yeah, I've had a good life, right?"
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.